Welcome to the Trauma Informed Lens Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Bennett. Each episode, we talk about the research and practical aspects of the trauma informed movement. This podcast is not designed to replace mental health services. If you feel uncomfortable or triggered by our discussion, please consider seeking your own trauma treatment. In no way is seeking treatment an admission of weakness. It is a chance to build resiliency and experience post-traumatic trauma. You can find show notes, resources, and more at traumainformedlens.org. Welcome, friends, to the Trauma Informed Lens Podcast. I'm Matt Bennett, and I'm here with Beth Sandlin today to talk about trauma-informed Pilates approaches. So I was talking to Beth before we got on here. I know there's like some maybe machine involved with Pilates, and it's supposed to work your core. So Beth is going to teach us both about Pilates, and I cannot wait to hear about what she's doing from a trauma-informed perspective. So Beth, let me turn it over to you to give an introduction of who you are to our folks, and maybe for your unfortunate host here, what is Pilates, more so than my thinking it's a machine to work your core?
Wonderful. Yes, so my name is Beth Sandlin. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I explore the Pilates method through support, education, and exploration, whether that's working with people one-on-one or through the membership option that I teach or the trauma-informed Pilates approach course that I teach for Pilates teachers. And really, this is so that people feel empowered to make choices that are best for them, whether they're a Pilates teacher or just simply like Pilates and want to move with it. So I've been teaching Pilates since 2004. I have a background in health education as well. And until very recently, I worked on a university campus here in Colorado and realized very quickly that not only in our health clinic on campus that we needed to be trauma-informed, but people who we were engaging with in the clinic then would go to the counseling center or would go to a classroom presentation of mine or a health education event or wind up in my Pilates class. And really, we should meet people where they are in every capacity and be trauma-informed in every single aspect to be more inclusive. And so started branching out, I would say, in around that time, 2011, 2012, exploring what would a trauma-informed approach look like within the Pilates methodology, because I knew it was part of a yoga methodology for some yoga teachers. Yep. I always say that there is an opportunity in every profession to be trauma-informed and also not be trauma-informed.
Absolutely.
And really wanted to explore this for the Pilates method, because when I backtrack to when I tried yoga around the same time I tried Pilates, I really didn't like yoga so much. I didn't go back for 10 years. Interesting now, I'm also a yoga teacher, but Pilates was better for me at that time. And so this is just another way to give people more options with movement modalities.
Very cool. And I have been such a fan of, you know, it's sort of the traditionally trained mental health therapist, talk therapist. You know, my 17-year-old journey into really understanding trauma as well as I can, the yoga, the movement, dance, all these things have just been so, because, you know, not everybody's ready to put their trauma into words. And so one, to have any sort of person in an education position, and I'm assuming like in yoga, there might be some vulnerability when you do Pilates. I need to get a better vision in my head, but you know, it's just so to have these avenues of healing where, like you said, we can meet folks where they are at, and that might be the first step in treatment. Later on might be part of their journey, or it might not be, but to have these options, we're just doing folks who are struggling such a service to do it. So help me, as someone who knows really very little about Pilates, give me just a really quick crash course on what is Pilates?
Well, there's a lot of different types of Pilates, just like there's a lot of different types of yoga. And you're right in your introduction. You're like, maybe it's something with machines. We call it equipment just because machines do something for you. And really, we want someone to feel empowered and in control of the equipment that they're on. And so there's a lot of big pieces of equipment that someone may see within the Pilates studio that, to be honest, feels very intimidating to someone who maybe isn't familiar with the use. But the only reason why the equipment was created, if we look back at the lineage, was to offer more support for people so that they can move more optimally in their body and with their experience. And there's different pieces of equipment because what works really well for one person, maybe someone else may need a different piece of equipment to really offer that support. And then there's also where the method got started, which is Pilates mat work. It may be a little bit more similar to yoga. There's obviously still a lot of differences, but that's generally taught group classes. There are smaller group classes with the equipment as well, but there's not as much support. I specialize in mat work, so I do embed support into it, but inevitably when you have more assistance from like a bar that's helping you roll up, it's just going to be a different experience when we take that to the mat. And so what I like about Pilates is it does offer more variety within the scope of work, from the mat work to apparatus work. It's more accessible because of that. So if we think about someone may have a challenging time getting all the way down onto the mat, and we have pieces of equipment where
no really flexibility can... here whatsoever. So I'm liking what I'm hearing so far.
Yeah. And I think another misnomer, especially if someone were to like go to Instagram or just look at images of Pilates, is sometimes people will post like the most challenging exercises. They're like, oh no, we won't start there, right? We will work with you where you are to really feel good about the work. It doesn't mean it won't be challenging at times, because that's just the experiment of, I think, whatever we tap into, just like therapy, sometimes it's a challenging process to go through, but you as the clinician pace it with the client, and the Pilates teacher would pace it with their client, the progression of the work.
Great. So would I go to a Pilates class, you know, and most of that, so I'll just be right. Like my Pilates experience has been one of my best friends, his ex-wife had a car accident. He had this huge machine in his bedroom that he was really pissed off about, never got used. And then when I walked my dogs in an old neighborhood, I walked by a Pilates studio. So that's kind of my reference. But I'm assuming you would like sort of... Boy, let me just throw this out here. And if I'm totally off base, just correct me. It's like, sort of when I think about going to yoga, there's a couple different reasons that might bring you to yoga. One is it's a good physical workout for you, but there's also kind of the mindfulness components to it. Yoga is rooted in a multi-thousand year generational spiritual practice. So I wonder, like, why would somebody walk into a Pilates studio? Why would that sort of be, maybe out of interest, but kind of why would someone come to do Pilates?
Yeah. Well, some people like Pilates versus yoga because Pilates doesn't embed and it's not innately in the practice to be a spiritual practice. Yeah. I know that there's some yoga teachers who do not teach the spiritual practice at all, but it's still a barrier for some people. As well, Pilates can be more restorative. And so someone's first exposure could be like your friend, after a car accident. Maybe they start out with it with a few exercises with a physical therapist, perhaps, and then maybe they are referred to a Pilates studio to continue their journey because they're familiar with the classes. A lot of people do come to Pilates for rehabilitation work, though there's people who come because they just enjoy the workout. It's something a little bit different than a classic gym workout, I would say. There's a beautiful complexity to it that continues to allow someone to explore new aspects of exercises that they've done a really long time. And one thing that I really value about it is that it's not like you're going to build muscle and then you have to stretch and then you have to work on mobility and then you have to work on balance work, which is how a lot of more typical gym workouts are formatted. We're seeing more variety in that now, of course, but that has always been part of the Pilates method. And that's what makes it the exercises challenging, because it's not only requires strength. In one exercise could be strength, flexibility, and mobility. So it's actually a time saver, though I will say that's where the learning curve comes into play. So if someone is more of a strength-based person, you know, they've been to the gym a lot, they may come to a Pilates session and be like, why can't I do this? Well, it's maybe the flexibility component. But if someone comes from yoga and maybe they're more in tune with the flexibility aspect, or they're naturally flexible, then the strength component is something that we want to work on. And yet we can work on the same exercise and tailor it in a different way depending upon a person. So it's really individual why someone may want to move with the method. One thing that I've realized is a lot of people enjoy the connection, the mind-body connection, as you stated, that they get from the method, and the sense that we talk a lot about control. Yes, from the center, from core activation, which we were talking about center activation before that word was coined in the Pilates method, our center activation. And they like to experience that control that they have themselves and to be taught from that aspect. And so that's for me when I started really looking at a trauma-informed approach, like, oh, this could really tie in well with the Pilates method, especially if we're going to be more intentional about how we teach.
Right. So tell me about, like, it sounds like you may have had the Pilates background and the trauma background to bring those together. So I'd love to hear kind of your journey in the trauma-informed paradigm world, and then kind of the thinking that got you into creating this approach to Pilates.
Yes. So for years, I exclusively taught in Pilates studios and really was isolated in the fact of who I was having conversations with, the continuing education, which was more the traditional continuing education. And I started getting an itch like, okay, I have a degree in health education and not really doing much with it. I mean, it was informing my work a little bit, but I wasn't really utilizing it. And so I made the transition to college health. I started out as the mind-body fitness coordinator, where not only was I teaching Pilates, but oversaw yoga and Tai Chi and Nia and other movement modalities. And then the next year stepped into more of an administrative role in health education, putting together the events and programs and services. That role morphed over the years, and I ended up being assistant director of educational services, in which I had more of a tie-in with the health center. That was the department I was housed under. And we saw a variety of different transitions, and I had a lot of conversations with people who I would have never had conversations with just exclusively being a Pilates teacher. LGBTQ Student Resource Center, Interpersonal Violence Office, of course, our behavioral and mental health team as well, medical team as well. And our behavioral and mental health director, he wanted to start a cohesive transgender healthcare protocol for people who wanted to transition. They had always done it informally, but really wanted something more formal, more processes and procedures. And so he pulled me in to do kind of the admin piece. And we started outreaching and working with the LGBTQ Student Resource Center. And it was in a forum that someone had talked about a medical experience that they had, in which a medical provider went to touch their partner and the partner wasn't ready for that. And the person said, doesn't a medical provider realize that someone who has experienced trauma may not be ready for someone to touch them, or you may need to just talk them through it a different way? And our behavioral health provider said, well, actually, generally, that's not part of training. You know, that's continuing education. So I really valued being able to talk to people who were like upfront with what was part of our training and what wasn't, no matter the field. And it got me thinking, well, geez, like that's a medical setting in which touch is 100% necessary sometimes. How does this apply to Pilates? And 2011, 2012 was when I first heard trauma-informed yoga. And I thought, oh, that could be interesting for Pilates. And I couldn't find any continuing education for trauma-informed Pilates. I kept looking and waiting and waiting. Meanwhile, I kept having conversations with these other offices about consent and what does that look like. And every form of relationships with people was going through the transgender healthcare protocol in the clinic. And it got to a point where it was like, okay, we are not waiting anymore because people need this. Both professionals and people who are coming to the Pilates method.
Yes. Awesome. So you, you know, I love that experience because we share a certain personality trait, probably is mostly better for us, but sometimes I imagine sometimes gets us, you know, into too many things at times, but I had the same experience when I'm big on motivational interviewing approach and wanted to read a trauma-informed book on motivational interviewing. Didn't find one, so, you know, I decided to write one myself. So I think we share that personality trait. So I also know that while it sounds good to create a new way to look at, putting the trauma-informed lens on something as big as motivational interviewing or Pilates, something that sort of exists, is not the easiest thing to do, especially if you're going to communicate that to other people. So, you know, I'm fascinated in, you've got this knowledge about trauma. You've seen sort of the impact in different arenas. I love that the patient said, whoa, wait a minute, what you're doing here is not okay. And that it sounded like you had enough insight and work to look at that seriously within that scope of your job and with the folks you were working with. So you take that lens and you put it on Pilates. I imagine it took quite a bit of work to find the bringing those two together. And I kind of wonder, what insights did you come out of that experience with? How can, you know, well, kind of where does trauma inform Pilates and how does Pilates maybe play a role in folks' healing and recovery process from trauma?
Well, what I realized, it was a journey of personal exploration as well, where I look back at what clients I really like were easy to work with and what experiences weren't benefiting the clients in the past and myself. And I realized the missing gap was understanding about trauma. And this was years after I had really started evaluating it. Because when I first got into a trauma-informed approach, I went into it thinking, okay, this is a trauma-informed approach for sexual assault survivors, because I was working closely with the interpersonal violence office, and obviously that's their sole focus. And the deeper I got into trauma, I realized, people came to me all the time and had trauma. Sometimes they disclosed it. I know that many times they didn't. And oh, I experienced trauma in my past and my traumatic experiences, that's why I worked really well with some people and didn't with others. And I realized that there was this beautiful tie-in. And sometimes Pilates instructors intuitively just understood that and other times not. I'm more of like, let's understand why, let's unpack the why, and then you can be more intentional with the work. To progress it and move it forward and really catch up to where we are right now with understanding someone's response to trauma and how it could be short-term and long-term and all these different aspects. And one thing that I keep advocating for within the Pilates community for Pilates instructors, that if we keep saying Pilates is a mind-body movement modality, if you leave out the mind aspect, right, it is just... it's not whole. We don't understand the whole picture. And sometimes the barrier to working effectively with someone is that missing piece of understanding about trauma. And it's not to diagnose, because I'm sick. Right. I out of anyone stay within my lane. Yes. And it's not to diagnose, but it's to be more inclusive in the way that we teach and respectful of the individual who is coming to see us.
Awesome. Awesome. And so the approach is to really, just kind of a question, the answer might be no, but that informed piece, sometimes I think we just say trauma informed and we forget to, understanding that. And I think how to work with folks with trauma histories, and probably assuming that pretty much you need to assume everybody has it, and until you get to know, build trust, all that. Have you seen that the Pilates approaches, because let me use my, again, little understanding that I have of trauma-sensitive yoga approaches. I know a lot of what we're doing in that modality is really looking at, okay, you're holding a pose, you're being in touch with your body, the breathing helps regulate the autonomic nervous system, brings the ventral vagal online, the pose is going to challenge that regulation, so you're kind of building up that, you know, from my nerdy perspective, ventral vagal break, but emotional regulation in most words. So have you done some thinking about, okay, so Pilates is, you know, I want to just ask, is the core work connected to trauma in any way, but I'll throw it out more generally, is there ways to work with folks that might identify, hey, I come from a trauma background, I hear you're a trauma-informed Pilates instructor. Are there any ways that you suggest working with folks to help build up the parts of the body, the mind that have been damaged by trauma?
Yeah, it's really through an empowering lens, and that takes time. Even if someone hasn't experienced trauma, if we look at just like our standard education system of you're going to do it this way, the right way, and you get an A. If you do it the wrong way, you get an F.
Yes.
and that's how Pilates and sometimes yoga is taught. And then we have other instructors, trauma-informed instructors, or those who just move more intuitively, like, let's give you different options. What's your experience with each option without leading them to which one is best? And if someone doesn't like something, I'm just going to leave it. Like, fine, maybe we'll come back to that later. Maybe we won't. And it's not that I just leave it on the table. Sometimes I'll explain why I feel it will be valuable, but they know their experience more than I can visually see it. Right. And I go back to when I was taking a private session with someone years ago. I was doing an ab exercise called the 100, and it was a different variation of it. And afterwards, she goes, "That looked so great. How did it feel?" And I said, "I just felt it in my neck the entire time." Wow. And the instructor said, "Oh my gosh, like, it looked great." I'm like, right, because you don't know how it feels to me.
Yeah.
You can't see that. And so it's a different perspective, teaching the method that it's not just how it looks, it's how the sense is for someone. And I have known people from a trauma-informed perspective. I would say most people don't necessarily disclose that to Pilates teachers. Those who have, they may want to come in and just like talk through the experience first before they jump on the equipment right away.
Right.
Part of my trauma-informed approach is not just teaching about the interpersonal interaction, but how do we make this really cohesive from the very first touch point, which for a lot of people is going to be on social media, whether it's Instagram or Facebook or their website. So they understand what Pilates is and isn't. So they understand how you teach. So you're giving them choices along the way. And that can really help people feel more comfortable stepping into the Pilates experience, because I think the more seasoned a Pilates teacher gets, that's awesome, but we get more detached from how it felt the very first session. And I remember how it felt the very first session, weird and awkward and strange.
well, I love that too. I mean, you know, because well, what I see happening, and it's been, you know, and I know you've been on this journey along the way as well, is like, you know, when I first learned the ACE study back in 2003, nobody was really, I remember like the first trauma training I ever did, when I asked, has anybody ever seen this? Like, nobody's hand had gone up. And I really, what I'm excited about, I'm worried about a few things as well as we progress into like everybody knows about this now, which again, a lot of us have been working so many years to get to that place, is like now it seems like we're getting to a place where having experienced trauma, we're starting to at least educate the world that it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you per se. I know that even language is so generic anymore, but it's like, I feel like, hey, if I see on your site, if I'm looking that you're a trauma informed, that hey, maybe I can disclose that I don't feel, I really want to come in, but I don't want you to lay your hands on me in any way. And I don't even know if that happens in play, but if somebody like me goes out looking for a Pilates class, I may want to be sure that, you know, there's not that sort of adjustments going on. I just don't feel comfortable with that right away. So I also think that that's just such a, like a gift for folks who might be nervous to go into something because of their past experiences with trauma, maybe abuse, other things, to know that they can have that frank conversation with their Pilates instructors and engage in something they may not have engaged with before seeing that on the website or other places. So
100%. And that's why it's important, because we know for a lot of people who have, whether they've experienced trauma or not, if they are led to the outcome that the teacher wants, will oftentimes give the teacher the answer that they think they want. Yeah, right. And absolutely. So how can you get as close as possible to actual consent rather than a biased or coerced consent? And how is that embedded on the website into the forums? How is that followed up with a conversation so people really feel safe and opting out and there's equal choices, which is not something that we traditionally were trained in the Pilates method, I will say. And even for people, Pilates teachers who have gone through my training, they've come to me and said, I wasn't comfortable with touch, but I went and taught that way because I didn't know there was another way. There have been other teachers who have intuitively made changes and made shifts, but really haven't been vocal about it within the Pilates community that they've done this. And so it's just pulling together these stories. And I know the touch is valuable when to help someone maybe explore the method. I am someone who I appreciate touch, and I've never felt uncomfortable when someone has adjusted me. So I come from a place of privilege in that sense. But now I understand, and for years, right, have understood a different approach. And so in my classes, I don't use touch really ever, especially because of the setting I was teaching on, large group classes. Mm-hmm. It's very challenging to get consent to touch in that manner. And I also feel there's so many other options. And with Pilates in particular, because there's so many pieces of equipment and small props and pillows and cushions to really help someone, it's like, grab one of those, hand it to the client, let them position it in the right place for them, and talk them through the session in a different way. So it's a lot of conversations I've had with people inside the Pilates studio and people as well who have been clients and never told their Pilates teachers like their actual experience, because it was not kind of the scope of practice. Right. And also maybe they didn't feel comfortable telling them about it as well.
Wow. Yeah, I used to have a membership to this national massage chain. I'll leave them unmentioned. But one of the things I did like, and I'm not sure what kind of thinking around this, but you know, that it, on your intake, and they did this with you like every 6 months, you could like identify body parts that you were okay being touched in and those that you weren't. And I just thought that was a really, you know, and it was just part of the paperwork. Like it wasn't like a judgment one way or the other. And when you walked in, I don't care. Like, I'm kind of like you. It's like, I just need 90 minutes because I'm 6'7" and an hour is not enough. And I want to get the whole treatment. But, you know, I thought that was a great approach because it's like, there's no judgment here. It's just like, hey, if you don't want to be touched in your lower back, we're not going to do that. So, I think that the knowledge of this, however that knowledge is gained, I think that was maybe a reactive to some of the things I saw in the news about this lawsuits against this chain. But I was like, okay, you know, you're evolving your practice that way, which, you know, I think there's more we can be creative with that and less stigmatizing around it, the better going forward. One of the things that I'd love to ask is like, you're taking the trauma-informed paradigm, you're actually introducing it to a whole new area. And I wonder what kind of feedback you've gotten from folks who this might be their first exposure or thinking about trauma in their Pilates practice and how they instruct classes or do individual sessions. What is the feedback you've gotten from folks that have gone through your trainings?
It's on spectrum for people who have gone through my trainings. It has been, they have made changes that from like their intake forms to the physical environment of their space, because I talk and teach about that, to also then that in-person experience. It's a very reflective course as well, because I do want them to reflect back on whether they've been teaching a year to 20 years. And I've had people go through it, brand new teachers to very seasoned teachers, in a non-judgmental way, like what are the challenges that you face with clients? And oftentimes what they're unpacking is the root of it is perhaps not understanding about trauma or not teaching in this trauma-informed paradigm. So a lot of people feel validated as well. Like they've personally experienced trauma as a Pilates teacher and never felt supported to explore a different way teaching because of the way that traditionally we are trained to teach, to really noticing with clients. Some people have wanted this because they have worked with clients who have just all of a sudden started crying. And I think every Pilates teacher has had clients cry and we're like, okay, that's okay. Or we have clients who, you know, people label them as like jerks or they're just socially awkward. I'm like, that's probably trauma. I mean, let's be a little bit more compassionate here. Like if you knew their full story, would we approach that in a different way? And for me anyways, and many people have gone through the course, the answer is yes. I will also say, which is why I wanted to have this conversation, since we are at the beginning phase of this, that there are Pilates teachers who are like, I use touch to teach and people need to tell me that they don't like touch. It's like, okay, I need, there's work to be done. Do you disclose that on your website? If the answer is no, then I'm sorry, that's not great for the client. And so this is why for like all professions, if they want to refer out to a movement modality, because maybe they feel it would help their client to establish a connection with someone in their community who is trauma informed or at least understands about trauma. And I was talking with someone else recently about this, that there's these different like segments. There's people who just intuitively are trauma informed and they don't really know much about the data behind it, but they've made adaptations. Then there's people who know about trauma, they understand it, but they don't make any changes in the way that they approach teaching, right? And so that's not, to me, trauma-informed. That's not taking that proactive action. So it's this combination, which in the Pilates community, we're very good about like, okay, we know something new about muscles. We know something new about fascia. How does that inform Pilates, our Pilates approach? Okay, we know something new about the brain, about body reaction to trauma. How does that inform our approach to teaching? And part of it is that as I'm getting into more conversations, Pilates teachers are very aware that they want to stay within their scope of practice. They do not want to branch out and do counseling.
Right.
And I'm 100%, I don't want to branch out and do counseling either. That's not what I'm trained in. That's not what I do. However, when we know about this, we can actually offer referrals, just like we would offer a referral for a physical therapist or a doctor. If we see something coming up one time or continuously, offer a referral to a mental health specialist. So that's really where I see it, that we're at the very beginning stages. So it's this spectrum. Some people are right in the middle. Some are like, no, we don't do that. And others are like, thank goodness we're finally talking about this in the Pilates community.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a typical change process and the paradigm shift that needs to happen as well. So, well, one of the things like where I get excited about, and you mentioned this as well, is like the complementary aspect of something like it, as a trauma therapist, like. To have this as, you know, and complementary going both ways, you know, that I'm complementing the physical kind of strengthening and healing, you know, that's going on. One of my big like passions now that my listeners are probably sick of me talking about is like, you know, heart rate variability and looking at that balance between the parasympathetic or ventral vagal and the sympathetic system. And one of the things that it's for me as a mental, with my mental health background, it's just opened this whole new window up to, I better talk about diet with folks. You know, if they're eating inflammatory foods, everything I'm doing as a therapist is being counteracted by, well, not everything, but a good portion is their body is being put in a stress response by their diet. If they're not exercising, you know, my work can still help, but I'm missing a way to help heal that nervous system. And so what, and I just love to get your opinion on this. One of the things that I really see us moving forward collectively, now that we have, you know, trauma-informed Pilates and yoga, I've heard some Tai Chi folks integrating trauma-informed approaches to this, and it's getting there. I just kind of, if you look into the future, where do you see, you know, Pilates being maybe part of someone's healing journey in that way? How can you see that kind of help be a part of that for a lot of folks?
I do, because for a lot of Pilates teachers, that's why we're Pilates teachers, because yeah. It healed us in some sense. For many teachers, they focus on the physical first, and it's longer before they understand the mind-body connection, I would say, depending upon the training they went through. But it was especially when I read Bessel's book, The Body Keeps the Score, years ago for the first time. You know, I think all of us have probably read it more than one time now.
If not, go read it.
But there, he obviously talks more about yoga. There was this one story of a client who contributed her healing to not only working with him, but Pilates through the center core activation. And that was another, like, why aren't we exploring this more for clients, because, or for people in general? The very first name of Pilates, because Joseph Pilates created the system, he did not name it after himself, was Controlology. Felt the mind should control the body. So we need to understand the mind, how it can influence the body, what barriers may be there. And there is some stuff, just like yoga, if we look at the lineage of how it's traditionally or classically taught, how we taught is not how I would teach in a trauma-informed approach, but he was on to something with that mind-body connection. Yeah. Mind controls the body. And what I've realized working with more people, the more that I infuse this into how I teach, it's not just do it the right way. It's how does it feel? Let's take your practice off the mat, which is something that I teach a lot. It starts trickling out into other aspects of their life. Just like how you mentioned that it's could be a nutrition aspect that you want to work and complement. And I've worked with a lot of mental health providers who one mental health provider always or oftentimes refer their clients to breathing exercises. Another mental health provider really relied on like group exercise to help her clients, her patients. And what I realized is, what if we just had like all these different tools, and depending upon the client, they may like do one or two, but it's not just the breathing and pausing and mindful meditation, because we know for some people that's actually quite triggering. And so that's one of the values of Pilates, if taught in a trauma-informed way, especially, is that it's not, doesn't tend to be as still as yoga, which can be very triggering for someone. There's more movement involved. And so it's a different mind-body modality that someone can try.
Very cool. Well, and there's so many, because whenever I go to any sort of instructor or therapist, it's like, Matt, you're not in your body. I'm like, you're way up here. I'm like, yeah, I kind of like being up there sometimes. But, you know, this just keeps getting older. Up there, I'm still like 12. So, but you know, I think that it's that loss of connection to your body in some ways, that sense of being out of control, where I think this could be such a really cool healing process with this. And just the idea of that control is being part of, again, maybe regaining physical health as well. I think, you know, in the mental health arena, we just haven't paid enough attention to some of the fundamentals of wellness to our great detriment. And what I love is, you know, whereas when I was practicing and had a full caseload, there wasn't any yoga wasn't in Muncie, Indiana at the time when I started my practice. So we didn't even have any of that to kind of think about. But I just think it's so great right now that we can have confidence referring and maybe even partnering with providers who can help that physical recovery from trauma, the balancing of that nervous system is just such a cool place to be in this paradigm at this point. It's exciting to come across folks like you doing this great work.
It really is. And one of the beauties of Pilates is there's this interesting balance between like strength of like really pushing, because a lot in a Pilates studio wouldn't be weights per se, it would be through springs. And so there's this dynamic nature of springs, which you need to be more focused in because it changes. It's not a consistent weight. And then there's also an ease that we need to find to work optimally with each exercise. So depending upon the person we're working with, maybe they want to focus more on ease before they tap into strength, or someone else, you know, I've looked back at some clients who I've worked with very strong, they identify as strong. And so we need to work strength and then try to find the ease so they can find strength in a different, more subtle way, which is challenging to tap into, not only from a muscular level, but just from a conceptual level as well.
Wonderful. So I want to get a little nerdy here. And I may, if this question is just not even relative, just say, Matt, just stop. But I'm fascinated with, you know, the core. And I really have done, you know, not a deep dive, but before COVID, I was in Qigong classes. And I'm interested about like thinking about how, you know, Daniel Siegel gives us this great information that the mind is the flow of energy and information kind of throughout the body. And I see correlations between like the, it is not a perfect correlation, but there's at least overlap. You throw the vagal nerve map on top of the Chinese medicine map. And no, it's not one-to-one, but boy, are those things really, of course, you know, really connected in some ways. There's something going on there that at least my nerdy mind can run with and have fun with for an afternoon. And I kind of wonder is you know, and again, me using the core, I know oversimplifies everything, but I just kind of wonder as you sort of working with that mind body connection, you know, I know yoga has this chakras, you know, is there like that balancing? Is it a search for balance in what folks are doing? I wonder if there's kind of any like things about like energy, you talk about control, or am I just way off in left field and Pilates doesn't think about that in the way this nerd's talking about it?
Well, we don't focus on the chakras for sure. Some Pilates teachers may, if they have a dual certification and maybe they do a fusion class. I tend to keep them separate, even though I am a yoga teacher as well. And personally, I do chakra work, but I keep separate and intentionally so. But interestingly enough, the core activation, the deepest core activation is disrupted when someone inhibits their breathing, right? When they don't have the deep breathing. So it goes back into, okay, if we're looking at core activation, we will inevitably eventually focus on breathing. Maybe it's not right away for someone, because it's complex and there's a lot going on and can be triggering. But there is that correlation then of when someone's breathing is restored, not only does it benefit the mind and it strengthens the prefrontal cortex and helps the mind, it helps not only the core, but like the pelvic floor, the deepest layer of the abs, some other stabilizing muscles as well. But it's so subtle sometimes that we may tap into that in a different way. You brought up a really interesting point that I really try to drive home, because being a health educator, I know all these different health education models. At the end of the day, they're all models. And if you put all your, you know, eggs in one basket, it really does a disservice. We want to take a further step back. So it's how do the models, as you were like tapping into, how do they intersect and how do they overlap? How do they complement each other? And I think that's where the beauty of more information lies. And it can at the same time, sometimes feel a little overwhelming at first.
Yeah, I totally get that. Every book I read, I'm excited and overwhelmed at the same time. So kind of a final question here. As the founder of this, where do you see, let's say we're 5-10 years out from now, where would you like this to go? Do you have any visions? Obviously, you're doing such a great thing for the Pilates community by getting this into the consciousness. You know, are you looking at what some next steps might be combining all this amazing expertise and experience that you have.
Yeah, so at this time, the program that I have, the continuing education courses for current Pilates teachers, and where I see it evolving is having at least some of this information housed within every Pilates continuing education or every Pilates initial certification coursework. Because I just think back, gosh, if I would have realized this from the beginning, this would have really helped me and also helped my continuing education path. Because that's the thing, when we get into any field, it's like you have your initial, whether it's your degree or in Pilates, it's a certificate of completion. Yeah. And then there's always continuing education that's going to evolve. So we stay current with best practices. And we also layer on our own lived experience of just being in the field for an extended period of time. So really looking forward to incorporating this into other continuing education programs. Myself, I'll be 2021, will be having a trauma-informed Pilates mat certification, focusing just on the mat work, since I really do value that. It is more accessible to people for a variety of reasons. And it'll be all online because I love the online space. I always say I'm 100% online by choice, and I have been for like 2-3 years now.
Well, good call where we're at currently in the world. Well, and that was one of my questions too, because I think some of my frustrations, and you just answered it, is, you know, and I think there's going to be a natural, this is, I'm not going to change this anytime soon, but it's like, you know, one of the worries that I had was, well, you know, you've got to be able to afford a class to sort of get connected to this. And You know, I love that you're focusing on that mat work, because what I hear possibly with that is, you know, partnering, you could partner with a child welfare facility and go in and do restorative stuff for, you know, the kiddos that struggle with all sorts of trauma, and maybe even the staff who are probably experiencing vicarious and secondary trauma themselves. And so this does sound like it is, you don't have to necessarily pack up all the machinery to go do Pilates, and that this is more mobile than I might have thought it was at the beginning of this podcast too.
Yeah, it can be very mobile, and there's value in the bigger pieces of equipment. Yeah. But at the end of the day, Joseph Pilates' mission, if Pilates instructors have probably read his book, Return to Life, it's a short little book. He wanted to be Pilates in everyone's home, and he focused on the mat work. Why I think that we've seen more of the studio and apparatus, the equipment work, is because we can, in one term, make it more accessible, but when we do that, it makes it more inaccessible in another way. So it's just looking at this balance, and that's actually why, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago now, I started a YouTube channel, Trifecta Pilates, because I was like, this needs to be in more people's homes in a way that's not talking. I love YouTube, but a lot of the videos, especially back in the day and still now for Pilates, are very workout based. And I'm not saying that I don't do workouts per se, but as you were saying, there is restorative work as well. There is work that we can do just breathing or stretching. And so trying to stay more true to the method in a platform that is more accessible to people, because people who work with me both on YouTube and also in my private membership, many of them don't have access to a Pilates studio. Maybe they used to in the past and they moved, or maybe it's just inconvenient for sure right now. They may not be able to access it. So it does open up the doors into where we can move with Pilates.
Very cool. I always love that answer, because like I said, I know that, you know, just the realm of the world, that a lot of folks that, you know, I've worked with in my career who just, you know, usually in poverty in some way or the other, you know, there's all these interventions, but it's like years until it becomes accessible for them. So I'm so excited that this is mobile in that way. Very cool. Any other final words but before we go, and give folks a way to get in touch with you as well?
Yeah, I just always, I'll end with a quote that I live by, and that is Maya Angelou's, do the best you can until you know better. No matter what field you're in, we are always learning, we're always exploring. And sometimes, not only with trauma, but the work that we do, we feel ashamed because we learn something that could have helped us in the past. And it's like, oh my gosh, we want to drop that, because shame, no matter what we're talking about, closes the doors to the conversation. And really, a trauma-informed approach, we're wanting to open the doors to a conversation and really work where we are right now. And so that's really helped me just tap into, okay, I'm never going to be, if I want to say 100% trauma-informed. It was a lesson learned that I was teaching a class. It was a few years ago. I thought, I'm trauma-informed now. Like, this is great. And I caught myself saying something. And I was like, darn it. That was not trauma-informed. But what was the awareness piece so that I could take corrective action in the future and not repeat that. I think that's what value it brings.
So important. I love your thinking around that too. It's like, I've kind of given up on this because the language, has evolved beyond my thinking, but it's like, I always like to say, you know, I almost like to think about being trauma informed as something you're going to spend the rest of your career striving towards. Now, you can make progressions along that way, but even like in my, who's created like a whole life out of thinking about this, writing about this, podcasting about this, you know, just trying to get the word out there as much as possible. It's like, I'm still so humbled by everything I don't know about the brain. You know, I'm learning more about, you know, as soon as I thought I got an okay understanding about the nervous system in the head, and it's like, oh, but there's this whole nervous system in your body that's also being impacted by this. So it's like, if you think you've arrived, I've got some books for you to read that will blow your mind. But it's like, I love that. I love that mentality though, because it's like, as soon as you become something, what else do you have to learn? And I think we're too early in this understanding when we bring neurobiology and epigenetics and things like, you know, now we're talking about Pilates. Well, you know, are you integrating trauma-informed physical health into your thinking about this paradigm? And so I love your understanding there. Is, you know, I know we have to say we're trauma-informed to put in for a grant. So it's like, this language is being forced upon us and probably accepted too easily, in my opinion, but it's like, you know, at least in your head, you're always working towards something greater. So I love that idea. So tell people, we'll put all this at traumainformlens.org. We'll put all kinds of show notes and links up there. But just if somebody's listening to this in the car, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yes. So you can find me at Trifecta Pilates, either on YouTube. That's more of my movement channel, less of the professional development aspect. But find me on YouTube. That's trifectapilates.com is where you can find me. Website on Instagram, Trifecta Pilates, and the more professional aspect is trauma-informed Pilates on Instagram as well. I intentionally kept those pieces separate and would love to connect with anyone in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And since here in Colorado, our summer, which extended till like last week with like 80 degrees and good running weather, is gone. So I might have to get on YouTube and do a little bit of Pilates this afternoon. So Beth, thank you so much. This was amazing. Have to have you back at some time. Keep us in the loop of what you're doing. And thank you for bringing this paradigm into a whole new arena. So thank you so much for being such a great guest.
Oh, and thank you as well. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thanks, everybody.